Before we get started with today's episode of Amped Up with Ryan Knight, we want to let you know that we have exclusive bonus content on Patreon at patreon.com/ampedup. You can find the video versions of all our interviews, as well as bonus content with me, Ryan's producer, Rob Bermudez. So make sure you check out our bonus content today at patreon.com/ampedup. Thanks for your support and enjoy the show.
Welcome to Amped Up. This is your host, Ryan Knight, and we have a very special guest today. Our guest is Tara Reid. Tara is a survivor, an animal rights activist, and author. Tara, welcome to Amped Up.
Oh, thank you for having me, Ryan. It's good to see you.
Yeah, thank you for coming back on the show. We spoke last year during the general election, right, kind of when everything was happening. Mm-hmm. And since our last conversation, which if you haven't listened to my first conversation with Tara, I highly recommend you go listen to it because you were so forthcoming and truthful and really spoke from the heart. And I think you touched a lot of people. You touched me just with your courage and your bravery. But since you last came on the show, you've finished your book and your new book is out. And it's called Left Out: When the Truth Doesn't Fit In. And it's about the aftermath of coming forward against Joe Biden. What happened to you after you spoke out last year?
Well, it was really stunning. From my perspective, I expected, of course, maybe there would be a rejection of what I said by Joe Biden's campaign and, you know, as he went forward. But I didn't expect to be called, you know, a Russian asset. I didn't expect to be class shamed for being working class. I didn't expect the vitriol that I experienced. And I think it opened my eyes to media, corporate media, in a way that I'd never really known as just a general citizen. I mean, even, you know, my past in the entertainment industry didn't really expose quite what it's like now, which is very, very tight as far as what they want the public to know and what they allow to be here. They become the gatekeepers to all information or stories. And if you were powerful enough, like Joe Biden and his campaign, I think at the time I spoke with you, he had spent $600,000, according to the FEC, on his public relations campaign. To date, he has spent $2.2 million with SKD, Knickerbocker, with Anita Dunn, who runs that, who also happened to be the founder of Time's Up, who's supposed to be helping women with stories of sexual harassment or sexual assault. When I came forward about the sexual harassment, as everyone may know, and sexual assault that happened from Joe Biden as working as a staffer, I sought help from Time's Up and was rejected, not for the reasons that one would think. They said it was because he was a political candidate, it was too political and would affect their 501c3. Due to the investigative reporting, it was revealed that Anita Dunn had actually been working for Joe Biden's campaign, and they did not inform me of the conflict of interest. So I was reaching out for help from the very people that had harmed me, essentially. What people don't realize is that when there's a powerful person, they spend a great deal of money on what's called messaging, and then media complies with that messaging. And so you won't see a lot of stories come up. And that's why your podcast is very important. The Intercept, Glenn Greenwald himself with Substack, independent ways to get information is more crucial now than any time because corporate media has closed the ranks and closed the doors. And you see that with Joe Biden. And now you see it with Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah. And we're going to get to Andrew Cuomo a little bit later in the show. But I want to kind of get expand on what you just said, because what you just said is shocking, and it is blatant corruption that an organization that was set up to protect women was actually not protecting women, but was hired by the Joe Biden campaign to smear women and to harass women who come forward to reveal their truth. Do you want to just kind of expand on that? Because again, we don't hear about any of that in the corporate media. Until you just mentioned it, I know I read an article a few months ago, but to know that his campaign spent $2.2 million to smear and shame and harass you for having the courage to come forward is about as corrupt as it can get. And then you layer on the fact that this is the party that claims that it fights for women's rights and that it is a champion of the Me Too movement. It turns out that's not actually the case. That the Democratic Party, believes all women until women come forward against a powerful Democrat like Joe Biden or Andrew Cuomo. And then they do the exact opposite of believing women. They make it more difficult for them. They smear them. They harass them like they did with you. And that just perpetuates this rape culture that we're trying to fight against. And it just blows my mind to hear that an organization that was supposed to protect women was doing the exact opposite.
Exactly. I mean, Time's Up has $28 million to help women, and they're gatekeeping what stories come forward. In fact, there was just an article by the Daily Beast about that I'd recommend looking at by Emily Sugarman that kind of examines a recent scandal where they didn't go after someone. In other words, they're protecting certain people and not elevating certain stories depending on access to power and to money. And that is, in my opinion, the crux of great corruption. Anita Dunn, one of the founders of Time's Up, is now the senior White House advisor for Joe Biden. So where does that leave us, the eight women that came forward? And I do know of more women that wanted to come forward. But after seeing me eviscerated in the press, threatened not only when I spoke to you, I lost quite a bit, but I was threatened with prison for perjury. Now, those charges were dropped because I didn't commit perjury. I never lied about my education. Ryan Grimm went to great lengths studying my story. And fortunately, that just aired, I guess, on Rising recently, where he explained it and called out the New York Times to correct the record. And they didn't. They still haven't to date. I'm hoping someday they will. I've pursued legal action, and I'm going to continue to pursue legal action against the New York Times for publishing accidentally my social security number, but also, you know, for misstating facts. So they were presenting opinions as facts, really. And I am going to pursue that. And it's not about my ego or anything about that, Ryan. It's really about other survivors, the chilling effect this has had on them coming forward. And that we can't allow sexual assault and sexual harassment to become partisan. Right. And what happened with my story, my whole history coming forward with Biden, is it simply became weaponized by the media. And they went after me. And I did not have the resources for a public relations team. You know, I was lucky to find a publisher for my book that would, TV Guestbert, that was kind enough to take on the project. And it's received so much suppression. It's amazing. It's hard for me to get my voice heard. So, you know, shows like yours really elevate conversations with US citizens that are being targeted. The other thing that happened besides the smearing was, you know, just kind of erasing my career successes. And so on one hand, you have Joe Biden, even as soon as 2 weeks ago, stating that it's safe for a woman to come forward with a story about sexual harassment and sexual assault. He was referring to the Cuomo survivors. But behind the scenes, the super PAC supporting the Democratic National Committee, like Really America, were paying social media trolls to attack and smear me and other survivors online.
And that's right. Brooklyn Dad Defiant was one of them who just got revealed a few weeks ago. And I saw the tweet where he viciously smeared you and also tried to smear the woman who came forward against Andrew Cuomo as well.
Right.
And to know that there's this kind of pay to play going on behind the scenes where these PACs now are paying people to spread lies about victims on social media. I mean, it's a level of corruption that I don't even know if we see all of that to that degree in the Republican Party. The Republican Party just flat out lies or deflects or shifts. Mm-hmm. But now you have Democrats paying people with high follower counts. I think this Brooklyn Dad Defiant guy has, you know, almost a million followers, to literally tweet out to shame and harass survivors like yourself to protect the Democratic Party and to protect Joe Biden and to protect, you know, the neoliberal establishment. I mean, it is just blatant corruption. And, you know, I think that, you know, kind of just getting back, I want to get back a little bit because we have some more questions that are on this very topic we're talking about right now. So I want to kind of get back to your book. Okay. Because you sent me a copy of the book, and I just want to recommend that everyone who's listening to the show to go pick up a copy of your book, because you're so candid in the book, and you're so you just lay it all out. You know, I have so much respect for someone who can just write so openly and honestly about some of the most traumatic events that have unfolded in their lives, and you know, doing that, you know, writing very candidly and openly about your trauma, that takes a lot of courage. Did writing this book and getting everything out there help you heal? And what do you want to say to other people who are also dealing with trauma, abuse, and pain in their lives?
Well, thank you for reading it. I appreciate it. And I appreciate your comments. I wanted to really let survivors know, I mean, complex trauma is very common with a lot of women. And when you look at the statistics, you know, 3 out of 5 women will experience in America domestic violence. You know, 1 out of 3 women will be sexually assaulted before they're 18 years old. These are startling statistics from, you know, the National Victim Council. And what that tells you is there's a lot going on about rape culture in America. And so one of the feedbacks that happened during you know, one of me coming forward, was survivors saying to me that they were ashamed of things in their past, or they even were afraid to talk about other times that they were assaulted or abused. And I decided, you know, no, I need to talk about, I experienced childhood trauma. My father was very abusive. And, you know, that's not a secret. CPS had to get involved and remove me from the home. And that's not when it didn't happen very often. So that tells you how bad it was. You know, and then I went on to experience other, and I'm not trying to, when I say this next thing, it's not victim blaming in any way, but what I was trying to look at in my own life was, why am I experiencing this more than once in my life? What is wrong with me? And what I've come to find out just through my own self-exploration and then through professional work and training and that, is that it's not about the survivors or the victims of trauma. It's about the people perpetrating. We have a lot of perpetrators, you know, that are emboldened to commit assault. And it's, in particular with sexual assault, it's more about power and control than it is about sex, right? Sexual harassment, the same thing. But it all is the core of our country. And it all links also to economics and patriarchy and capitalism. And it's all, right, you know, combined. And I tried to lay that out in the book as best I could through my own personal experience. And by being open, I'm not perfect. I'm not a perfect person. I'm a work in progress. And that work in progress, part of that healing was writing it. So you're right. It was very healing to write it. It was also hard at times because I had to talk about family members in a very candid way. Both my parents are dead, so that's not as much an issue, but other family members that are reading it, it's, you know, it's had an impact. I had to write about friends candidly and myself, and my own failings. And, you know, I think by doing that, it just says to survivors, it's okay if you are, you know, had someone else in your life that abused you. It doesn't take away from what happened to you. And in fact, predators, and the studies have been shown by experts, they key in on people with vulnerabilities. And I think that Joe Biden keyed in on me a bit because I was alone in Washington, D.C. I was young, I was vulnerable, I was accessible. And I also didn't have the power to fight back. I didn't have the power structure or, you know, whatever to really, you know, do something. I don't think he consciously thought about like that. I don't think predators often do. It's a sort of a subconscious, you know, underneath what's going on motivator. They look for easy prey. It's like, you know, a predator looking, they're not going to look for the really fast, really able gazelle. They're going to look for the one with the limp, right? The one that's dragging its leg. It's easier to get. in my case, I was very trusting, very naive, and I was very open. And those are all good qualities, but they can also provide an atmosphere where something can happen. Also, the boundaries. Because I've suffered from complex trauma, my boundaries were different. Violence was normalized a bit, right? So when Joe Biden started by putting his hand on my shoulder, putting his fingers underneath my hair and rubbing my neck, those kinds of things, he was normalizing the behavior before he went on to the next.
And normalizing the fact that he can even put his hands on you in the first place, which is inappropriate.
Right.
And so it's like a grooming process that, you know, people explain it where they start, you know, small and start doing things that might seem innocent to just a casual observer, but it's not. It is, you know, it starts there and then it continues. And one thing I think it's so interesting what you're touching on, though, is how our society and how the rich and powerful are protected, you know, from any consequences of abusing their power and engaging in abuse and sexual assault. And what I think is what is so brave about you and anyone who comes forward against a powerful person is when you allow someone in a position of power to abuse their power, you know, they're supposed to, Joe Biden is supposed to be there to help the people, but he's using his power to actually hurt the people. And then you have an entire power structure that defends him despite the fact that he's hurting people. And you see this story play out in a lot of different institutions in our society, institutions that people put up on these pedestals. You can go look at everything from the Catholic Church, which I was raised in, that I at one point in my life looked at as this holy institution, come to find out that, oh no, they're actually, you know, molesting children, right? You know, same thing with our government and both corrupt parties. They're supposed to be helping the people, helping the planet. Nope. Turns out both of these corrupt parties in Washington are using their power to control the people, to hurt the people, and to just enrich themselves and keep the people divided so we never see what they're really doing behind closed doors, right? So the people are all fighting each other. And so this pattern of abuse, it tends to, our society accepts it. And with everything from when it comes to policies around economic policies that continue to feed more money to the corporations and keep everyday people in poverty, to things like sexual assault, which you have had to deal with, where powerful men get away with it because of the institutions are set up to protect them and not to protect people like you. Joe Biden had $2.2 million that he could use to shame you, as he revealed, and you didn't have the equal money in return to defend yourself. Joe Biden had MSNBC and CNN and the entire corporate media. You know, you had independent media, you know, little shows like mine. And so you see the power imbalance right there, that our society is actually set up to hurt everyday people and to hurt victims and protect the powerful.
Yeah, protect the status quo. And it's all about that, you know, conglomerate of power. And, you know, you've talked about economic disparity. When you have 86% of the population, you know, almost in poverty, when you have, 10% of the wealthy owning most of the wealth in America and not sharing it, not investing in the infrastructure or back into the local communities or back into their own communities, you know, so you have the Jeff Bezos and people like that, that don't care, Elon Musk, you know, they're only in it for their own enrichment. And they've actually made money from the pandemic while other people are losing their housing and losing, you know, are in food lines and children are in poverty. And I had given a statistic recently in an interview that, you know, in America, a quarter of our children almost are in poverty, but 73% of those are Black and brown children of color. And that's according to the Defense Children's Fund and that statistic. And that's 2 years old. I mean, it's exponentially increased in the last 2 years because of the pandemic. The situation's dire. My situation is a microcosm of the macrocosm, if you will, because I believe that my economics, you know, my obstacles to justice, access to justice, were economic as well. When you have so much power and money consolidated, and you have surrogates doing work for you, and you're just a lone voice trying to say, okay, this happened to me, but you have others with that much power and influence that can just silence you in different ways. It's daunting, but there was a freedom to it too, because people have raked over my life in a way that was very unflattering and very negative. But I'm not ashamed of being poor. I'm not ashamed of economically struggling. So that shaming didn't really work with me. I'm proud of the fact that I was able to raise my daughter. She's a healthy adult who's working in the world and happy and has a good relationship. And I raised her alone with no child support. And I went through law school and I put myself through school all the way with, you know, and also got into debt applying for loans and grants. So, but I'm proud of those accomplishments because there's nothing wrong with struggling. I think the New York Times said something about Tara Reid was so poor she had to borrow law books, as if it was an indication of my low character or something. They did it as an attack rather than—
Or as if every other, more than half the country right now is struggling and struggling to just make a living and survive and have a dignified life. While the rich, like you touch on, just keep getting richer and richer, and the corporations keep consolidating their power. Like, it doesn't have to be this way. You know, we deserve so much better than this.
We do.
We deserve to live in a world where everyone has economic freedom.
And what are the wealth disparity, Ryan? Because you talk about that. What are the recent statistics? Because mine's a couple years old that I knew. What are they now?
When you say 78% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
And 140 million Americans are either poor or low income, while just 3 billionaires now own more wealth than half of our entire nation. And then when you expand the statistics globally, it actually gets even more dire. There are now 2,100 billionaires on the planet, and these 2,100 billionaires own more wealth, or I should say hoard more wealth, than 60% of the planet's population, which is 4.6 billion people. Just 2,100 billionaires have more combined wealth than 4.6 billion people on the planet. This is an economic system that is unsustainable. It is the root cause, as you touched on, of all of our problems, from climate crisis to economic inequality to racial injustice. You can trace every systemic problem in America, in the world, to our corrupt capitalist economic system that is rigged by the governments. You know, and that's kind of the component everyone misses, because a lot of people think, oh no, you know, the government is socialism somehow, which is actually not what socialism is at all. Socialism is the people owning the means of production.
Right.
It's the people having all the economic power in their hands. What we have are governments that are in the pockets of the giant corporations and the billionaire class, who just continue to preserve this and protect this decrepit capitalist system, which just funnels more and more money up here. And so while it kind of worked for some Americans, maybe, you know, decades ago in the 60s and 70s, I like to be clear, capitalism has never worked for everyone, because it is a system of exploitation. To, you know, just to have a ruling class, you have to have a poor and a working class for the ruling class to exploit. That is why Jeff Bezos has $200 billion, because he exploited workers and underpaid them to ship all his goods to market. You know, he didn't make that $200 billion. He took it. He stole it. The people in his company made that money, and they don't share in the fruits of that labor. And so that is the crux of literally every issue in our society. You can trace it back to: we have an unjust economic system that does not reward people's labor. It actually exploits their labor, because they're not compensated for the full value of the goods and services they produce. The corporations underpay their workers, and then that surplus value that is the difference between what the person produced for the company and what they sell a product for, that surplus value is how they're making their billions and billions of dollars. They're not transferring that down to their workers. And so,
right.
Sorry to go on a little economic tangent, but it is connected.
No, I asked you to.
It is absolutely connected, because, like you shared, you know, your opportunities in this country were limited, and that made you more vulnerable to a powerful person taking advantage of you. And that is what our institutions are supposed to help the people, protect the people. Turns out they're doing the exact opposite. They're violating people. They are taking advantage of people. They're not protecting the people. And so that is why it is so important for people like you to come and share your testimony about what the system actually does and what's actually happening. Because like you said, the story corporate media paints, the story these surrogates for both of these corporate party paints, it's a different reality than the lived experiences of everyday Americans and Americans like yourself who've been violated by people that the system protects. Because the system wants to protect its profits. It wants to protect its corporate donors. It doesn't want to protect the people. One thing I really want to give you an opportunity to do is, you know, just following you on social media, there has been so many Joe Biden supporters and DNC loyalists who I have seen firsthand. I have seen them firsthand bully you, dox you, and harass you online for simply speaking your truth. So what would you like to say to these people right now? I want to give you an opportunity. Just if you could look them all in the eyes, what would you tell these people who have bullied you and harassed you for simply having the courage to come forward?
What I'd like to say is, in particular to the blue checks or, you know, celebrities, as you've noticed, that have done the same, you know, talk to me personally before you make a judgment. It's not about you believing my story. If you don't believe me, that's fine, but it doesn't mean you have to attack me. It doesn't mean you have to wipe me off the face of the earth. I think that if I could look them in the eye, I would say that. I would say the very value system you claim to have, you're violating by the way you're treating me and trying to shame me and try to bully me. The very value system you have about protecting women is not coming through by your tweets, like saying things like, and this was a Democratic surrogate again, said, oh, you know, referred to what I was wearing when I was assaulted, you know, as a rape myth. The, you know, perpetuating rape myths is not helping, but referring to my assault in a very crude way, like Bill Maher did, which I won't even repeat. It was so crude. In a, you know, his platform is exponentially bigger than mine. And for him to deny my story of what happened as a staffer working for Joe Biden was powerfully silencing. And also, it was humiliating and it was devastating that someone would refer to it in such a crude and ugly way. And just, it kind of set the tone. So what I would say to them is, you're setting the tone for hatred for someone that you don't even know, and you're not even giving a chance to speak. And it's stunning and it's wrong. And, you know, back to the whole protecting women and Joe Biden's record, you know, that's just, a lot of times predators will use the mantra that they're protectors or they're saviors in some way while they do harm. And he did a lot of harm to me personally, but he also did a lot of harm to women in general by this wolf in sheep's clothing kind of approach. And then what happens is he builds alliances with powerful women so that they'll protect him and he can and conceal his acts of what he does. One news anchor that wanted me to do an interview shared with me that Joe Biden's behavior is an open secret. His, you know, they described it as loutish ways of approaching women, staffers included, and interns. And yet they protect it. The media protects it. I know that some media has information about Joe Biden's, about other accusers that wanted to come forward, but are so frightened by what happened to me, you know, they're not going to. Yet he's given a pass. No one even asks him, you know, and now you see this evolving in the Democratic Party. They're having to answer questions because of the Cuomo people coming forward, which is much more recent. These staffers have had these assaults happen within the last few years. And, you know, there's going to be some, you know, reckoning, I would imagine, about it. But I got told by one, you know, outlet that probably they're going to try to wait for it to die down in the media and the public and make it go away that way. I don't think it's going anywhere. I think the younger generation coming up is sick of the status quo gaslighting and putting us in denial about, you know, not having access to justice, not having access to healthcare, not having access to safe work environments that don't include sexual harassment and sexual assault. We want accountability. What Cuomo did, you know, hiding the numbers or manipulating the numbers and presenting himself as this, you know, person who knows about the pandemic and he's, you know, authority and he's going to help and do all this. And he ended up harming and over 15,000 people died. And instead of coming forth and saying, I've, you know, these policies need to change and this is why, and these are the numbers, he hid them. That's the core of corruption. It's again, it's just all about containment of power and containment of those resources.
Well, that you in a microcosm just summed up the entire Democratic Party. You know, they say they're the party that protect women. Turns out, no, they don't. They harm women and violate women. They say that, you know, they're the party of that black people are the backbone of the Democratic Party. Well, actually, Joe Biden wrote the crime bill, and, you know, which led to the was basically the architect of mass incarceration, which disproportionately locked up black and brown people for nonviolent offenses like marijuana.
Right.
You know, the Democratic Party claims they're the anti-war party. No, Joe Biden actually, he not just voted for the Iraq War, he spearheaded and led the effort to get the American public to come on board for the Iraq War. So you can go line item by line item that the Democrats' platitudes and the way they try to present themselves as they're some, you know, savior of the working class and the poor and of women and of people of color, it doesn't match their actual track record and the actual policies that they support, which actually harm the very marginalized communities that they claim to protect. And so in a way, it makes the Democratic Party more dangerous than the Republican Party, because the Republican Party doesn't lie. You know, they're not out there saying, yeah, we're the party of women.
Yeah.
We're the party of people of color.
Yeah.
You know, we're the party of LGBTQ people.
Nope.
They're just, you know, engaging in their brazen, you know, warmongering and, you know, funneling more money to their corporate donors and protecting big business and capitalism. They're just doing that brazenly. But it's the Democrats who sedate the people with these nice platitudes who turn around then and stab people in the back. And I think that's more dangerous. And I think we're finding that out, you know. And I think one of the reasons that the DNC surrogates and these people harass you, Tara, is because you are courageous enough to say, no, like, I'm not going to fall for this gaslighting anymore. I'm not going to continue to give my power away to a party that continues to lie to the people. And I think that's what sets off a lot of these trolls online and a lot of the paid trolls that we talked about earlier, like Brooklyn Dad Defiant, because Democrats cannot defend the fact that their party engages in the exact same corruption as Republicans do, like ignoring sexual assault allegations, locking kids in cages, putting their corporate donors over the basic needs of the people, and supporting these endless wars.
Right.
So instead, they resort to smearing the people like yourself who are brave enough to call out the Democrats' hypocrisy and corruption. You know, oh, you're a Russian asset. You're a Trump supporter. No, actually, you're just a human being who is tired of our corrupt political system and wants to live in a better world and wants justice for the assault that was perpetrated onto you. That's all. That's it.
That's it.
And for demanding all of that, you get all these. And so I think it says more about them that they're willing to protect a corrupt party than to stand up and have the courage to fight back against the corruption. It says way more about them than it will ever say about you and me and other people who have the courage to fight back against this party that claims to be our allies and claims to be, you know, on our side, but just over and over again stabs us in the back. And we're saying enough.
Yeah, exactly. Everything you just said and about the endless wars and all of that. I've been very vocal about being anti-imperialist. One of the things about the Russian agent thing is because I am very, you know, I happen to believe that Russia does not want to be our enemy and should not be our enemy. I think it would be interesting if we collaborated on science and technology as nations in the world or during the pandemic instead of, creating enemies that aren't, because it's just feeding the industrial military complex, which is part of capitalism. Raytheon, you know, that was all about the Syria bombings, was all about the Raytheon defense contracts. And a lot of people don't take the time to really look at this because they're busy trying to survive domestically. So it kind of allows this military branch, who has more money than's ever been given in domestic, you know, programs. And there's always such yelling and screaming about giving away money. But how many billions, I would say, into the trillions are given to the military? And how is that used?
Well, $1 trillion every year is given to the military. And then, $1
trillion. Right. So how is that used? It's used to oppress countries that are smaller. It's used to coup them illegally, like Bolivia. It's used, you know, like how it's used in Syria. Then, you know, instead of using diplomacy, there's tactics being used now with sanctions that's become, and who suffers really with the sanctions economically, right? That's exponentially, it's more women and children in foreign countries that are suffering.
And poor and working class people.
Mm-hmm. Working class people.
Yep.
Yeah. So it, you know, it's a cycle, but you're right. What's dangerous is that the Democratic Party presents these platitudes like, yes, we agree that billionaires, like for instance, even in his press conference today, Biden mentioned that billionaires aren't paying taxes. He mentioned it, but he's not doing anything about it.
Right.
And in fact,
no, he doesn't even support a wealth tax.
Exactly.
That's a perfect example of the Democratic Party. Yeah. He'll go on TV, pander, and say, yeah, billionaires should pay taxes. But then behind the scenes, he won't actually fight for a wealth tax because, and what I think is so fascinating is, remember, 131 billionaires donated to Joe Biden's campaign, mm-hmm. which was more billionaires than gave to Trump.
Right.
So that's where these DNC operatives, their lies start to fall apart.
Right.
When you actually kind of do the research
right.
and you look under the hood of the car and you see, oh, wait, no, it's not just the Republican Party that's been corrupted by corporate money. Wall Street gave more money in 2020 to the Democratic Party and Joe Biden than it gave to Donald Trump and the Republican Party.
So what does that
and
tell
more
you?
Billionaires
so what does
more
that
billionaires
us?
Donated to Joe Biden and the Democratic Party. It tells you that the Democratic Party is just as corrupt, mm-hmm. if not more corrupt, than the Republican Party. And I love that you brought up the thing about Russia, because I get called a Russian asset on a daily basis. Yeah. I've probably been called a Russian asset more than 1,000 times.
I'm just leaning into
it. For simply fighting for every single
Russian.
Person.
I don't care. Like,
well,
yeah,
they're
whatever.
Calling me that because I'm fighting for every person in this country mm-hmm. to have guaranteed health care.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like the fact that the DNC is so in bed with the big insurance companies mm-hmm. and big pharma that Hillary's entire aftermath, the DNC's entire strategy after they lost to Trump was not to look in the mirror and say, oh, we should support some better policies like Medicare for All or a Green New Deal or universal basic income or, you know, fighting for everyone to have a living wage in America. No, no, no. That wasn't their strategy. Their strategy was to demonize Russia and blame all of our problems domestically on a country, you know, that's halfway across the world. That was literally their whole strategy. Yeah. That's all they had. And what else is fascinating to me is that war is unpopular. Imperialism, the people are actually against war. So in order for the United States to be in these endless wars, which we've now been at for in the Middle East for over 20 years, and, you know, I mean, long before that, right? You have Vietnam. I mean, we've been at war with the world for the last century. And you're right. The imperialism, we go in, we invade other countries, we bomb them, and we exploit their natural resources. And we're taking their natural resources, essentially, to enrich our oligarchs. And we send poor and working class people to go fight these wars just to make the rich and our country richer. And, you know, because that's so unpopular, what the CIA and has to do and what both corporate parties have to do, but what the DNC is actually doing now more than the Republicans, is they manufacture consent and have to, you know, create these narratives about, oh, Russia's the boogeyman, China's the boogeyman. Actually, the United States of America is the boogeyman and is the evil empire that spends more money on their military than the next 10 nations combined.
Exactly.
We are the evil empire. We are the ones who are exploiting underdeveloped countries that are always at war with everyone, that are acting like the world police. That's America. And so they have to kind of point the finger everywhere else to get people to continue to pay taxes to a corrupt government that is just exploiting the resources abroad, putting sanctions on these countries, and really just causing chaos and catastrophe and disruption in the world. And it's really sad to understand that, but we have to take our power back as people. And we have to say that, like, we don't want to live in a nation that continues to perpetuate war against the people and the planet. We want to live in a nation that wants to be part of the solution, that wants to heal the planet, right. not bomb the planet. And so that takes us speaking truthfully that, yes, the United States of America is an empire. It is an empire that has existed based on exploiting other nations' resources, other nations' labor, and exploiting the working class and the poor right back here at home, too. That's what our country does.
Exactly. And you've hit a lot of points that when you have that much systemic corruption or a basis of ideology that's wrong, you have to create almost a cult to get people to follow it. So what you're seeing with the DNC and some of that is what Rose McGowan had coined when she talked about America as a cult. Like, it's become a cult, and specifically the Democratic Party, I would even, you know, and she's gone specifically about that as well, that it's odd. And so I know recently my daughter said to me, you know, I was receiving a lot of, hate online or whatever. And she said, well, Mom, you know, you called out the cult leader. Now the sheep don't know what to do. And it's stunning, really. Like,
you got a smart daughter.
That whole thing last week where Biden was distracting from the border, the immigration crisis, and distracting from domestic, the COVID crisis that we're still not able to get vaccines and there's not accessible healthcare. He distracted from that by doing two things, calling Vladimir Putin names, the president of Russia, and by calling out China in the same day. And it's like, no, I think the generation coming up is like, no, we don't want more war. We don't want an enemy manufactured by your rhetoric. Like, we don't want that. And, I think President Putin in a day on the internet kind of became a folk hero for his kind of calm response. Not to go into Russian policy, but just the fact that he just didn't engage. He's like, he kind of made it clear, look, we don't want to be enemies. Like, stop it. Right. Like, let's just have a dialogue in front of everyone on the internet. And of course, you know, Biden said no, but because Biden cognitively, I don't think could handle a live debate of any type. Just his press conference alone today was excruciatingly painful because you could see he was having trouble focusing and having trouble not, you know, meandering off on his own tangents or even forgetting where he was. He kept saying that out loud. Where am I? Where am I? And it's like, oh, yikes. You have your hands.
Well,
on
we
the
saw this in
coats.
The debate, though. We saw this is where you're absolutely right about calling the Democratic Party a cult. Yeah. I mean, I would argue that both parties are. We have two cults. You know, we have the blue mega and the red mega.
The binary kind of like, but they're both kind of melded the same. Yeah.
Yeah. And they'll both defend the cruelty and the corruption in their party until the cows come home. And then they'll call out the other party for doing the exact same thing. Yeah. You know, like under Trump, there were kids in cages. You know, under Trump, the billionaires got richer. Under Trump, you know, he bombed Syria. Well, turn around. Now we're in Joe Biden's presidency. Joe Biden bombed Syria. And the same Democrats who were mad when Trump did it now excuse it when Joe Biden does it.
Their kids in cages still. Don't you remember what Joe Biden said to his donors? He said nothing will fundamentally change.
That's right. Yep. And he's carrying through this promise. You know, kids in cages now under Joe Biden, but the same people who called Trump out for it now excuse Joe Biden. And so it is a cult. And it's people who don't think for themselves because they want to feel like there's one party or someone that's on their side. And I think the reality is too depressing for people. That the truth is, neither of these parties are on our side. They're all in it to enrich themselves. Right. And unfortunately, though, until you confront the truth, you know, the first step in any kind of recovery is getting out of denial.
Yeah.
And admitting that you're being lied to, admitting that what you believe is false. And I think both, liberals and conservatives, they both don't want to believe, you know, that the parties that they believe in are a lie and that they don't actually back up what they're saying. And so, again, we're stuck in this kind of duopoly that continues to feed the rich and take advantage of the poor.
And then they won't allow a third party to come forward, like the Green Party,
they will
the
People's not.
Party or any other independent party that wants, you know, more of a grassroots presence. And, you know, you make so many good points about the media, like, for instance, MSNBC, this megaphone in our ears of telling us who to like and who not. Rachel Maddow is paid over $33,000 a day to talk basically crap about Russia. I mean, all day, all night. She used to talk about other things. And it's just been stunning the way her rhetoric is so, if you were to listen to it objectively, it sounds very, very bigoted and very ugly. and very marginalizing to an entire, you know, people and very diverse culture of millions of people that live across the world. And it's like, no, we have problems here. Like they're not interfering with our election. We're interfering with our own democracy. The oligarchs, American oligarchs, are interfering with our own ability to elect who we want to represent us.
That's the biggest, the thing that shows you the level of cultishness in the Democratic Party is that Hillary Clinton, the DNC, the Rachel Maddows of the world, convinced liberals that the oligarchs in Russia are a bigger problem than the oligarchs in America who are stopping everyone from having universal health care.
Exactly.
Right? You know, and that is just, that shows you though, these people, there's no rhyme or reason to it. When you watch Rachel Maddow's show, she pretends that the political spectrum stops at liberal.
Right.
Liberal is a center-right capitalist ideology. She completely ignores any kind of socialist thought or any kind of true leftist ideology, which is about building an economy that works for everyone and getting away from this decrepit capitalist system that just continues to feed the wealthy. You won't hear any kind of conversation like that on Rachel Maddow's show. Again, it's demonizing Russia, demonizing China, propping up the DNC. Republicans are the boogeymen, you know, demonizing them. What's really sad to me is I just wish people would realize, okay, fine, you really don't like the Republican Party, then fight for something better. Right? Yep. Then actually fight for policies that uplift the people. But the truth is the Democratic Party doesn't want to do that because fighting for policies that uplift everyday Americans isn't good for their corporate donors who they work for. So they want to continue these kind of cultural wars and they want to continue pointing the finger at everyone else instead of tackling the root problem, which is our decrepit capitalist system. They never do that. And that is why the Democrats fight harder against the left and against socialists and against true progressives than even the Republican Party fights against. I mean, the Democrats fight so hard against the left. They fought harder against Bernie than they fought against Trump.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? And so when you realize that, you just see that it's not the Republican Party who's standing in the way of progress in America. I mean, I'm no Republican. I've never supported the party. But the problem is the Democratic Party. They are the ones who are standing in the way of the progress we need to uplift the poor and the working class and communities of color, which is ironic because that's the very constituents that the Democrats pander to for votes and say they represent, but the Democrats don't represent them. They get their votes and then they get power and then they stab the constituents who gave them power in the back. And they do it over and over again. And I'm over here like, when are the people going to wake up? And so one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, do you think it was more painful for you to find out that the party that you once belonged to and worked for and said it believes all women actually only believes women as long as they don't come forward against a powerful Democrat? Did it feel like a betrayal for you?
Yes. And in fact, I'm still processing the level of betrayals to find out that the people that I, you know, the party I was part of, some of these people I know and I worked with in the past were paid to smear me. I can't describe to you the level of it, except that it almost feels Shakespearean in its grotesqueness that, you know, just erasing someone for telling the truth to, you know, for identity politics to protect this person that they want at any cost. It was stunning. It's hard to hear his name multiple times, the filthy name. I don't want to hear his name anymore. I don't want to see his face. It's made me evaluate being American to the core, because what are my value systems? And so when I have defended Russia or China, or when I've said, hey, you're making someone the bad guy who's not the bad guy, I'm not trying to be a traitor to the United States. I'm trying to be a better American. I'm trying to lift the voices of the true working class and, you know, survivors of sexual assault and sexual harassment, because it is a nonpartisan issue. It crosses all socioeconomic lines. And that messaging has been lost in the noise of the media, just wanting to create a monster out of me for coming forward. And I guess my sympathy for people that get vilified in the press is because now I've experienced it. What the tactic is you dehumanize someone first, you monsterize it, you make them like so unappealing, you don't want anything to do with them. And then that makes, that sets a tone, and that makes it easy to let whatever happen, happen. So for instance, in my case, I'm a microcosm of that. They made me, one of the titles of one of the articles was deceitful, manipulative user, right? That's the headline. And that's how they wanted me seen. I wasn't important. You didn't want to hear Tara Reid's voice because she's ugly. She's this, she's her value system's wrong. She's a traitor. It was really painful to see that coming from Democrats. Those tactics were used against Dr. Ford by Republicans. And right. It's just, the hypocrisy was stunning. The fact that feminists, you know, and I won't even say which ones right now, but you can look up the articles that just eviscerated me and my story, never even talked to me. They just decided because they like Joe Biden, I had to cease to exist. So yeah, it was very, and I think writing the book, you know, Left Out When the Truth Doesn't Fit In, and the title kind of captures it. And my publisher helped me with the title because we were struggling with the title. And I think it really encapsulates what happened to me. I was part of the left, and then I got marginalized out because I spoke up when they just want you in lockstep. And I think that's happening to AOC. I had high hopes for her, and I reached out to her before I was public. I got no response. She still has never responded or reached out to me ever. And I was, you know, it's not like I was a random person. I worked for Leon Panetta. I worked for a state senator. I worked in a congressional race. I also worked for Joe Biden. But the fact she wouldn't even return a call, an email, and talk with me before I was public, Kamala Harris, neither, Elizabeth Warren. And I'm sorry to say, I reached out to Bernie Sanders. They didn't reach out to me either. Now, like some of his surrogates do support me and try to lift my story. But at the time, I was radioactive and they didn't touch me. So we really need to examine this.
Yep.
And we need to, you know, really drive home the point that access to justice isn't just for the rich and powerful. You know, restorative justice should be for everyone.
And, it, you know, to hear you talk so candidly about AOC and even Bernie, you know, it strikes a chord with me because, again, you know, if they're definitely better than the corporate Democrats,
and I support them
in some ways, but in other ways, as you just touch on, you know, it's not enough. You know, we live in a moment in history where it's not enough to just say, you know, you're for the people. You have to actually show you're for the people and get out there and fight for justice and fight for the people.
Right.
And so when the Democratic establishment is clearly not for the poor and the working class, and they're clearly for Wall Street and big business and oligarchs like Jeff Bezos, when that's who Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and the DNC are, you have to fight back against that. You have to take your bold agenda that you ran on, AOC and Bernie Sanders, and take the fight directly to the corrupt Democratic establishment and say, the reason we don't have Medicare for all in America is not because of the Republicans who you keep blaming. It's because the DNC and 90% of the Democratic Party, who controls the House right now, the Senate, and the White House, is bought and paid for by these giant insurance companies and big pharma. If you wanted to pass Medicare for all in the House, you could do it right now.
This minute.
But the reason you're not doing it, the reason you are not holding a floor vote on Medicare for all, is because you are bought and paid for by the giant insurance companies who want to just continue to profit off of our sickness and continue to deny people healthcare and deny their healthcare claims. It is outrageous. And so we can't. I was part of the Force the Vote campaign. I helped plan it, you know, along with Jimmy Dore and with the People's Party and with Brianna, Joy Gray.
Do you feel that cause that forced the vote discussion and then how it escalated into a rather large, do you feel that it divided the left more, or is it honing in on the message? What is your opinion now in the aftermath?
I don't think it divided the left at all. Okay. I think it exposed the left. I think it exposed who are the people that are actually fighting for dignity and justice for all people, who actually will go to the mat for the poor and the working class and to fight for policies like Medicare for all, and who is just more interested in you know, in power and in cozying up to the corrupt Democratic establishment. I think that for 3 years, the progressive movement didn't ask AOC and the squad really for anything.
Right.
And finally, it was like, we asked for something. It's like, demand a floor vote for Medicare for all. In order to vote, you know, in order for you to vote for someone as corrupt as Speaker Pelosi, you should leverage that vote. You should ask for something in return. And the fact that she just completely ignored us and wouldn't fight for a floor vote on Medicare for all, I think it was revelatory.
Right.
It showed that, like, what's the point of spending all this time and energy to elect progressives if they're not even going to stand up to the corrupt Democratic establishment?
Exactly.
Calling out Republicans for their corruption, that's the easy part. We already know that. We've been knowing that the Republican Party has been beholden to big business and billionaires for decades. Right. We know that. That's what they're known for historically. But it's the Democrats who conceal their corruption, who again, tell us they're on the people's side when really they're on the side of big business and the billionaires, just like Republicans. And so we need AOC and Bernie to call out Joe Biden, to call out Nancy Pelosi, right, to call out the corporate corruption in the DNC, because you can't heal what you won't reveal. Sunshine is the best disinfectant.
It is.
And so we need them to do that. And so the fact that they refused to do it a few months ago, and they're still refusing to fight back against the corrupt establishment, it shows you the limits of trying to move the Democratic Party left, or trying to reform the Democratic Party, right, or trying again to spend so much energy to, you know, change the Democratic Party. It can't be changed. It's corrupt. We're seeing that someone like AOC won't even stand up to the establishment and would rather kind of, you know, just sedate us with nice tweets and nice words than actually show her courage and fight back against Pelosi and the DNC. And then to hear that she didn't reach out back to you, it just kind of paints this picture that the Democratic Party really can't be reformed. And the solution for the people is all of us coming together and building our own power structure.
I know.
Whether that's a party or a movement, or I just don't think it's going to happen in a system that is as corrupt as both parties in Washington are.
And I think what you touched on too is the cult of personality. We can't get caught up in that.
Right.
And the whole thing about forcing the vote got into this rather than talking about the issue, which is the huge issue of just not being able to move the Democratic Party to 40% of the base, which is more left. But it became about personalities, Jimmy Dore's personality, yep, you know, people involved, AOC's.
And AOC's personality, like, how dare you, how dare you? And I never insulted her once. I just asked her to do her job and fight for the policy she campaigned on, as other people in the Force the Vote movement did. And it was like, we were being smeared and as agitators, disruptors, divisive, for actually just demanding a politician do their job, you know? And so it's like, they want to put her like on this pedestal.
Right.
And I just don't think you should put any politician on a pedestal.
No.
They're there to serve us.
Absolutely. And I think what you're saying is really very accurate, especially that, like I said, the cult of personality is not a good thing. There are no saviors. Bernie Sanders is not the savior. Neither is AOC. Not one person can do it. We as individuals collectively joining together.
That's right.
Holding our politicians accountable can do something, but it's also not fair to them. It puts them in a position, it sets them up for failure, right? Like AOC in a sense is set up for failure, because how can you put on one representative a whole bunch of expectations when she's up against a machine, right? So let's give her a little credit in that. She's up against a machine that wants to make sure she's never elected again. So,
well, the only way you go up against the machine is with the people.
It is the people.
You know, but she has to understand that. Yeah, well, she has to understand that, like, she doesn't get her power from the corrupt establishment.
Right.
The squad and progressives get their power from the people. So you have to summon the grassroots. You have to show us that you'll fight with us, that you'll actually, you know, fight back against the establishment. Then they would have the kind of pressure they would need to get the Democrats to finally stand up to the giant insurance companies and vote on Medicare for all in the House. But if you won't do that,
right,
if you won't actually kind of use your seat to expose the corruption in the DNC and to tell the grassroots you'll fight for them, you start to kind of, the grassroots will look for another direction, because they're like, well, what's the point of all this?
And,
you know, like,
yeah,
you're right. She is only one person, but there's now, like, you know, there's at least 10, I would say, true progressives.
Right.
And they're not doing enough. Like when it just comes down to like they could be doing so much more.
They could.
And they would rather kind of play patty cakes with Pelosi than fight back against the corruption of the Democratic Party. And I just don't need to hear another Democrat tell me how corrupt Republicans are. I'm like, fix your own shit.
Yeah.
You know, fix your own house. We get the Republicans are corrupt. But take care of your own house and get your own house in order, which continues to just give us platitudes and ignore the pain of the American people.
And there's part of me that cynically believes that oligarchs are sitting back and watching this, like the Koch brothers, like Bezos, like Gates. They're sitting back and watching this saying, let the peasants fight. We've still got all the money.
For sure.
Let them fight. Let them think that one of these parties, this duopoly, one of them will represent their interests, when in actuality, you know, that doesn't. And then what happens is you have when you try to get a third party going, you have the binary system starting to fall apart, right? So what happens, right? The Republicans will donate to the Green Party and infiltrate to try to, you know, corrupt that, or vice versa. The Democrats will infiltrate, you know, and cause chaos. So it kind of shakes the infrastructure of those independent parties trying to rise up and really make changes. So the answer for us is to be alert, aware. You know, there's no collective mom and dad that are going to take care of us. We have to take care of ourselves with, and I don't mean to sound, you know, because that's not what I mean to say, is we need to stay actively involved with justice, with democracy, with trying to get our, you know, ideals forward. Like the minimum wage, that should have been so easy. How did that fall apart? How did that finally fall apart? It fell apart. They blamed Republicans. And then there was some lame, you know, excuse for parliamentary. Like I've never heard that discussion before, right? About the parliamentary. Yeah. What is your thoughts on why the minimum wage fell apart? Like
apart for one simple reason. It fell apart because, first of all, you can't blame Republicans anymore.
Right.
Maybe you could get away with it more when, you know, Trump was president and the Republicans had the Senate. But now that the Democrats control the Senate, the House, and the White House, there's no more blaming Republicans. Right. There's no more blaming Russia.
Right.
The buck stops with you, Democrats. Yeah. You have the entire power of the federal government at your hands.
Right.
And the reason the $15 minimum wage fell apart, it's not because of Joe Manchin. It's not because of Kyrsten Sinema. They always find one or two scapegoats to deflect from the fact that the Democratic Party, just like the Republican Party, does not represent the interests of the working class. They represent the interests of big business and the billionaire class, the capitalist class. And the billionaire class and these giant corporations, they don't want to pay their workers a $15 minimum wage.
Nope.
Because you know what happens if they start paying their workers a fair wage? It's not even a living wage. If workers were paid a living wage, adjusted for the cost of inflation and to keep up with the rise in productivity over the last half century, the living wage in America today would be $24 an hour. Instead, people are paid a poverty starvation wage of $7.25.
Right.
And the reason they don't even want to pay $15, which is a much fairer wage, but it's still not a living wage, is because it eats into their bottom line.
Right.
It eats into the fat. And these giant corporations, they don't care. They want to continue to give their, I just read an article the other day, a big video game company, Activision, they laid off 1,000 employees over the last year. And after they laid off 1,000 employees, they gave their CEO a $200 million bonus check.
Wow.
I just don't understand how people aren't waking up and getting it. That capitalism has resulted in an economy where a corporation like Activision, one of the biggest video game companies in the world now, can lay off 1,000, you know, working class employees and then give one human being, one person, a $200 million check. There is something deeply, fundamentally wrong with capitalism. It is a system of exploitation. It is a system which exploits the labor of the poor and the working class to enrich the ruling class. That is what capitalism does. And now these capitalists and these giant corporations own and control our entire government and both parties. So when something like a little bit of justice could happen, something like a $15 minimum wage, the party that panders even harder than Republicans to the working class and says that they got their back, the Democrats won't even go to the mat and fight for the $15 minimum wage for the poor and the working class, the same way they'll fight, you know, for their corporate donors and to stop Medicare for All and to stop, you know, the way they stopped Bernie Sanders' campaign.
Right.
And so that's the problem. We've got politicians in both parties who represent the capitalist class, and we have no politicians that actually truly represent the working class and the poor. We have politicians who pander very well,
yeah.
You know, and I would even say the squad now, they do a good job of pandering to the working class, but they don't follow through and they won't stand up to the Joe Bidens and the Nancy Pelosi's and the Kristen Sinemas. So the minimum wage failed because the Democrats didn't fight for it. That's why it failed. And we need to keep holding them accountable, because as long as we have two parties that just serve big business, we're going to continue having these conversations, Dara, and the rich will keep getting richer and the poor will keep getting poorer. And we're at a moment in history now where enough is enough. We have to keep rising up. The labor movement has to step up. We have to keep organizing unions. We have to keep building power, you know, with third parties, socialist parties. You know, that's what it's going to take. It is going to take a socialist revolution to restore power to the people. To stop all of this injustice and inequality. And that is an overwhelming thing for a lot of people to hear. So they just kind of go back into fear and it's the false hope. You know, we have to stop believing in the false hope the Democrats sell you. Obama did it for 8 years.
Right.
He sedated us with these platitudes of hope and change while he was governing for Wall Street
and droning corporations
and big business
and
endless wars. And so we have to get away from that, and we have to fight for justice, and we have to fight for the world we deserve. And that takes courage, like you've shown, you know, throughout the past year. And kind of want to bring our conversation full circle here and wrap up. But, you know, I think the problem with all of the hypocrisy from Democrats is that they're the ones who claim that they're morally superior to Republicans. Mm-hmm. So when they do the exact same corrupt shit as Republicans, it exposes them as being no different or better than the party they claim is so evil. Democrats will try to justify their evil by saying they commit less of it than Republicans do. They will literally argue that, well, Trump has been accused by more women, or Biden is putting less kids in cages. But isn't the whole point to have leaders who don't commit any sexual assaults or put any kids in cages? Tara, what does it say to you about the Democratic Party and about American politics in general that the debate is always centered around which party does less evil instead of the fact that, you know, don't we deserve a party that fights for the greater good? Don't we have to get out of this justifying and normalizing any evil at all?
Exactly. I mean, there's that quote, the lesser of two evils is still evil. Like, there's just degrees of it, right? So we need to step up and we need to call out, well, what I did was call out what happened to me publicly. The risk, and it happened, was getting, you know, destroyed basically in public, being, you know, they were trying to humiliate me. I lost economic status. I lost work. I lost my housing, as you know. A lot of bad things happened. But the good that came out of it was that I shined some light, and it's there. Mm. They couldn't erase it totally. So even though it's dim, it's in the background. And then, of course, the Cuomo survivors having their courage to come forward. One is a current staff member, by the way, which takes a tremendous amount of courage. Because again, you're facing the loss of your career and your job by coming forward against a powerful person. That is the ways that we will move the conversation forward and create real systemic change. And what you're talking about with words like, you know, people are upset right now about words like revolution, because people are feeling frightened, because our government has used fear and weaponized fear in such a way that it's almost made people afraid to move right or left, right? It's paralyzing. People are just in survival mode. You know, that hierarchy of needs is not being met. So how can you have a higher thought process about getting a better government if you can't even get access to food or basic medical care? So somehow, collectively, we have to pull together and rise, you know, go beyond that. My story coming forward about Joe Biden was essential in shining a light on predatory behavior, because the Democratic Party not only uses me too as a shield, it rewards predators. It actually rewards them and gives them more power. And that's wrong. And it's been demonstrated again with Andrew Cuomo. And it's been demonstrated over and over again with different politicians. And you mentioned the Republicans. You know, sexual assault is just not partisan. It is what it is. This corruption is nonpartisan. It's interesting that they have labels Democrat, Republican, because at this point, I don't really see the difference in the ideologies. It's like you said, everyone's just sort of kowtowing to the oligarchs. All of it comes back to trying to find a voice and then collectively coming forward to create systemic change. And so then it becomes, how do we create a blueprint to do that? You know, I'm working on my part as an individual citizen to try to call out the corruption I see and shine light on it. And it is, you know, getting me called a Russian agent. And that doesn't bother me because, you know, it's a tired argument that people don't believe anymore. Russia, that's from the 70s. Russia isn't communist. They're capitalist too. And they have their own problems. And they definitely, you know, don't want war with our nation. I mean, that's really clear. And their leader has made that very clear. Whatever feelings you have about him, he doesn't want war with America. And he's said it publicly again and again and again. So we need to look at our own house, like you said, clean our own house, look at the collusion between the corporate media and the power brokers, politicians. We need to stop the identity politics, you know, looking at politicians, putting them up on a, you know, pedestal like we did AOC. They're human beings, and it's okay to criticize them, and it's okay to call them out if they're not doing what they said they were going to do. It's not abusive. It's calling them out. It's being critical. There's a difference. When people make a critique of me, I welcome it, and I look at it, and I answer it. When people call me names and, you know, vilify me, that's abuse, right? There's a difference. It's okay to be critical. It's okay to question. And I think people, like I said, back circling back to what I originally was asserting, that people are in fear right now, in such fear, right. And we need to somehow get unparalyzed and move forward. And you know, shows like yours are important. People need to support, you know, your platform and other platforms that really bring independent thought and critical reading and critical thought to the forefront so that we can make change and we can, you know, use our voices to say, hey, this happened. Like, what do you want to do about it now?
So. And that's what, I mean, that's what I was so inspired by you the last time we spoke is because, you know, you had every reason to give up when the system that you tried, that you worked in. I mean, you worked inside of the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. You were trying to make the party better.
Yeah.
And in doing so, you were violated in the most intense way a human being can be violated. And then to, you know, read your story and see how the New York Times, to protect Joe Biden, was trying to poor shame you and shame you for going through economic hardships in your life, as we've talked about on the show, as the majority of Americans at some point in their life have also gone through economic hardships through no fault of their own, because that is what happens under a decrepit capitalist system, which exploits the labor of the many to enrich the pockets of a few oligarchs, right? That's built into the system. Right. Nobody is poor because of choice. It's because of the systemic problems. It's because of the crisis of capitalism, a system that will give one person a $200 million bonus and lay off 1,000 workers.
Or,
you know, that is the problem. And so for someone like you, you had every reason to give up, but you didn't. You fought back. You rose up. You spoke your truth. You know, and that courage you showed is what heals. That's how you heal the world. You didn't give up. You wrote a book that I encourage everyone, after they finish listening to the show, to go pick up and read, because it is. It's so inspiring to see someone who had every reason to give up, but you didn't. And that's what we all have to do collectively. Yeah. Every poor and working class person with a system that's rigged against them, with two corrupt capitalist parties that are rigged against them, we all have every reason to just give up.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be so easy to, but we can't.
Right.
We have to hold on to that spark of hope. We have to get honest, get real, and do what you did. Rise up collectively, take our power back, and fight back against the status quo and against this corrupt system, because we all deserve so much better than this. And I want to ask you, because I noticed when I picked up the book that there's a horse on the cover of your book.
Yes.
And it, you know, this might sound trivial or it might not be significant, but for me, like when I was going through my pain and trauma and recovering from an addiction, animals kind of helped me. My four dogs helped, literally healed me as I was getting sober. And I just wanted to know if your horse or if animals have played a big part in healing from your trauma, because I think it's so easy to forget that, you know, the story of this planet is so much bigger than just the story of humankind, right? It's also the story of all these beautiful creatures and animals that are here with us that so often get left out and who are also exploited from our decrepit capitalist system. So, you know, did your horse help you heal?
Absolutely. And you mentioned I was an animal activist, and I have been since I was young, and rescuing animals. It started with that, working for, you know, volunteering for rescues and different wildlife nature preserves and all the things that I did throughout my life. Horses are especially dear to me, and I'm very against the horse slaughter. Like there's been millions of horses, like just last year alone, that were slaughtered in Canada and Mexico, and our wild horses are dwindling. And so I really want protection for them. And what's been happening is this, you know, the federal lands being sold off to cattle farmers. And so again, capitalism. So the Cattle Farmers Association is very strong. I knew that when I worked for Leon Panetta. They're a very strong lobby, and they've been promoting horse slaughter for years. And what it's done is there's, I think, two lines that are endangered of being extinct of wild horses in America. And I just think we can do better by the sentient beings. My horse I adopted. I encourage everyone to adopt rather than buy. And I adopted my horse, Charm. And I'm actually, my hands are on his back. The other horse photobombed. That's someone else's horse. And the photographer was trying to get a picture of me, and she kept coming, and it was such a good picture. We decided to use it. But horses are amazing. They have, you know, they're large animals that have, they're prey animals as well. And they've been known to have a really healing effect on people. There's equine therapy centers. I find my horse very healing. He's not a therapy horse at all. I've raised him since he was a year old, and he's now almost seven. And he's a character. But when I'm with him, it brings you close to nature. It brings you close to that, you know, and, you know, it is doable. I mean, you know, again, it's hard to have pets now because, you know, veterinarian bills can be as expensive as health bills for humans. So it's a commitment generally, but I recommend it because it's sentient beings in our lives are so important, and their voices are so silenced and they're not heard at all. So I've always wanted to help animals, and I have done what I could to do that and raise awareness, but also, you know, environmental causes are really dear to my heart, like the Marine Sanctuary Act along the coast of California, protecting dolphins and whales. What the work that Sea Shepherd does, if you ever get a chance to look up Sea Shepherd, it's amazing what they do to try to protect our oceans. So yeah, I find that healing. So my story, you know, about Joe Biden and the sexual harassment and sexual assault is a part of my journey, but it's not all of my journey, and it doesn't define who I am. And what I would say to survivors is, you know, take back your narrative. Don't let journalists, you know, even celebrity ones, don't let them take your narrative. Take your own narrative back, own it, and heal in your own way. And, you know, find that transformative way to do it through writing or through, you know, whatever means that works for you, music or therapy. But really, you know, there's a way to make it so that it's just a part of the tapestry of your life, but it doesn't have to rule your whole life.
And finally, I want to ask you about, you know, I asked you earlier to say something to the the people who have, the DNC bootlickers and loyalists, I would call them, who have really harassed you online and doxed you. But there also, there has been, I have seen an outpouring of support for you. And that has really uplifted my heart. I have seen a lot of people actually, you know, in the, I would call socialists or leftists, progressives, true progressives that are actually fighting back against corporate greed, have really embraced you and uplifted your story. And so I want to give you a moment just to, what do you want to say to those people who've actually been there for you and helped you? Because I think that that's what, as we continue to try to build power for the working class in this country, it's so easy to get caught up in how corrupt the two establishment parties are and the giant corporations and the oligarchs are. But we have to remember that like it's the people who want to be open to change and who are and who have open minds and want to live in a better society. Those are the people that we have to continue building coalitions with that also, you know, want to do better. And so I think it's also important to recognize those people because we do give the people who are so corrupt a lot of attention as well.
We do. Thank you for saying that. I want to say thank you to so many survivors who reach out to me. My DMs are open on Twitter, so you can reach me at Reed Alexandra, R-E-A-D-E. You can also find my book at TaraReedAuthor.com. So Reed is spelled R-E-A-D-E. So TaraReedAuthor.com. And the person that did the cover of my book or designed it is Avalon Clare. She does Avalon Clare Illustrated. She's been amazing. She's a DSA member and a true progressive. And, you know, Natalia, Eric, you know, I'm thinking of Anthony Zankas, who's a trauma professor. Lou Godbold, who's a silence breaker. But also,
I love Anthony. Anthony's amazing.
Yeah. I mean,
Anthony is such a sweet guy. He has such a big heart.
Yeah, it's become a small army. And you're right. A lot of progressive, a lot that supported Bernie and some of Bernie's party came around after he dropped out. That's when I saw more and more of that support after he was no longer in the race. And, you know, that meant a lot to me. That really warmed my heart to see people care. And some people just would say simply, I believe you. And that's, you know, what I can tell you is that that was my lifeline because I was experiencing, I was so isolated, plus COVID, of course, has us physically isolated. That, you know, when you're getting attacked by the press, by the New York Times, I mean, they did 3 consecutive hit articles on me. It's daunting. I would go to the gas station. I told this anecdote to someone, and in where I live, they have like full service or whatever. So I went in and I was trying to get gas for my car. They recognized me and wouldn't serve me. I was trying to get a place for my horse. And the person that owned the ranch said, I'm sorry, you know, you can't be here because people are voting for Joe Biden and we know who you are. So you need to go. And this has been my reality. That's how I lost my housing. So what I would say is the survivors that came forward to support me, the people that were just supporting me, just to support me, not necessarily survivors, meant the world and kept me connected. Because human beings need 2 things, right? They need safety and connection. And when you take one or both of those away, it's really hard to exist. It's hard to have courage. It's hard to come forward. So thank you for sharing your personal stories with me, you know, through DMs. And also, you know, I have this group of people, like I said, that meet every week and try to, you know, give goals and talk to me. And so we're trying to move my story forward. And like, we're trying to give support to the Cuomo survivors, for instance. We're trying to give a bigger voice to rape culture in general. And I have conversations with Rose McGowan, which are really meaningful about that. We talk about more meta issues than our personal, you know, what we went through personally. We talk more about like the bigger issue, which is, you know, getting beyond rape culture. So, and I really want to talk about male allies too. They're essential. And rape is, you know, not gender specific, right? It happens, it crosses all gender lines, socioeconomic lines, as we've said. So my heart goes out to everyone who's been silenced and who has no access to justice. So the access to justice you can find is within yourself by speaking up and shining light, because predators do not like it when the light is shined on them at all.
And do you mentioned Andrew Cuomo again, and what strikes me is that there was the Democratic Party has not held Joe Biden accountable. They are still giving Joe Biden a free pass right now. They never investigated no. Joe Biden. Their entire plan was to smear and harass and shame the victim, right. who happens to be you.
Right.
And one thing though that we know about these powerful institutions is that, do you feel any sort of kind of vindication that although the Democratic Party did not investigate Joe Biden, there is an impeachment investigation into Andrew Cuomo. And I wonder if your courage, you know, and you coming forward last year started this kind of, you know, gave other women permission to also come forward against the Democratic Party. And if there's any consolation in knowing that, although we don't have justice toward Joe Biden, the Democrats, it's like there's a moment happening where it's like they're not above reproach, right? Like we're actually getting an impeachment investigation against Andrew Cuomo. And I don't think that happens if you don't come forward last year. You know, so do you find any little vindication that maybe the needle's moved a little bit, that people are kind of waking up and being like, whoa, this party, not only they don't believe women, they're actually sexually harassing women.
Yeah.
You know, and they're perpetuating rape culture. Two of the most powerful Democrats are. Do you know what I mean? Do you think that you coming forward last year had something to do with the fact that we're seeing a little bit, maybe a shift in justice on how they're dealing with Andrew Cuomo? Oh.
I hope so. But I also, there's a cynical part of me that's waiting to see if there's actually going to be a investigation, right. or if it's like what you said earlier about Democrats giving a lot of platitudes or pandering, but then not really doing right. it. I think what kind of froze me up a little was just when Joe Biden said, oh, maybe there'll be criminal sanctions too. The way he talked about it made me think, uh-oh, are they even going to really investigate Cuomo? The other way to look at that is that I think the Democrats had decided because of the nursing home scandal with the 15,000 people dying, and him moving around the numbers and covering it up and staff admitting that he covered it up, that corruption. I think because, you know, he was the darling, he was going to be the 2024 candidate. He was one of those considerations. Yep. I think the Democrat elite had a battle or still battling about throwing him under the bus. Like they're done. Right. So we'll see what happens. We'll see. And I hope that investigation stays squarely on Andrew Cuomo and not the survivors, because I've seen them try to smear Lindsay Boylan and the others. And it's, you know, same tactics used with me, like, you know, dragging out their personnel records and looking at every conversation, you know, that kind of thing. And of course, Cuomo's trying to get powerful women to speak on his behalf. Weinstein did it. Yeah. Biden did it. Cuomo's doing it. You know, they all have the same playbook, and it's gross and it's old. And in a way it's worse. Like you said about Republicans, you know who they are. They say who they are. It's worse because of this whole hypocrisy. And also, like, you have Time's Up, which I believe, in my opinion, is more now of a catch and kill for powerful, you know, men not getting caught. That's how they're using it. They're misusing it. So it would be nice to see that organization opened up, cleaned out, and that $28 million really going to helping women, regardless of the party of the accused, right? It doesn't matter if they're Democrat or Republican. So, yeah, that's very good. So I didn't mean to go off on that, but yeah. I have strong feelings about the organizations that were set up to help women that aren't helping them.
Absolutely. And again, like this, you're right. There has been no justice yet in the Andrew Cuomo instance.
Right.
It is. I mean, I'm glad that, you know, I was calling for him to resign a month and a half ago, 2 months ago when I know Lindsay Boylan. I trust Lindsay Boylan in the same way that I trust you and I believe you.
Right.
And so, you know, I am so cynical now that I didn't even think they were going to investigate him. So like when they said, oh, we're having an impeachment investigation, I was like, okay, you know, like more, we still need to see actual justice and accountability. But I think we also need to, you know, it's important to keep, for people to see that there are victories for coming forward and being brave and fighting back against right. the system. And so, and we can't allow the Democratic Party to continue to hide behind this, you know, oh, we're the party of women, as they're literally harassing and abusing women. You know, we can't, we have to call it out. We have to demand investigation. We have to demand accountability. We have to demand better and stop allowing these surrogates and the media to continue to, like you said, they go on CNN, they go on MSNBC, and they defend the Democratic Party while they're calling out the Republicans for doing the same exact thing
that
the Democrats are doing. So, you know, I hope that as time goes on, more people will start to wake up and see the Democratic Party for what it is. I am a firm believer that we will not have the fundamental change we need to move this nation forward so long as the Democratic Party is allowed to occupy the space mm-hmm. of where a true left People's Party should be, mm-hmm. Because the Democratic Party is not a left party. It's a right-wing party.
It is.
It's a capitalist party. It's a pro-war party. It's a, you know, pro-oligarchy party, pro-harassing woman party, yeah. you know? And so until we have true accountability, it's these injustices will continue to happen. I just want to commend you,
thank you.
For coming forward, because you might not feel like it, but you're a winner. Like you in my book, like
you
are a winner.
Thank you.
Like you took your story back. You're telling your story. Mm-hmm. You wrote a book. You're healing, and you're not allowing this party to weaponize you and demonize you.
No.
And you're fighting for justice. And I think that is the best that any of us can do. So,
well, thank you.
Kudos to you, Tara.
Well, thank you for having me on. And, you know, one final thought that I think I want to leave people with, survivors, never be ashamed of your past. Like, don't let it be used to keep you from coming forward. When I was being threatened with them exposing my bankruptcy, I said, go ahead. A lot of people struggle with bankruptcy. Let them know how hard it is. I didn't, right. you know, so just know that we're human. We have struggles and they include a lot, but also tomorrow, there's going to be a world conference that Kamala Harris is heading, and they're going to be talking about empowering women and girls. And guess who's going to be discussing that with her? Bill Clinton.
Accused rapist Bill Clinton.
So we need to get out.
Unbelievable.
Like, that's an opportunity for us to get out and troll that event. Like, if, let's troll right. the trolls. Let's get out there and let it be known that that's not acceptable. You know, a Virginia who survived, you know, who's raped, you know, and the Epstein survivor, one of the Epstein survivors, she came out publicly and talked about it. And she's being trolled heavily right now online and not believed. And, you know, so many brave survivors try to get their voice heard and say, hey, wait a second. And look at, you know, this is wrong. And, you know, get shut down. But as far as activism, I guess I want to leave on this note, buy my book and read it, read about complex trauma and take action when you see a wrong, like tomorrow, you know, let people know that that's not okay. We don't need Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton had direct connections to Jeffrey Epstein, direct connections. He went to his island.
I have the
right?
picture.
Bill Clinton has been accused by multiple women of sexual assault. He's been accused of rape. And for the Democratic Party, I mean, this is how brazen they are, mm-hmm. though. They think they can get away with anything.
Exactly.
You know, this is how bold they are because of the collusion with the corporate media and because of, you know, all of their money and power, that they think that they can have an event for empowering women right. with an accused rapist.
Right.
While they try to think that they have a moral high ground over the Republican Party, you have no moral high ground to stand on. You are enabling rape culture. Right in front of our very eyes.
I have spoken to Juanita Broderick, and I believe her. Our political views are very different. She's a Republican now. I am not. She was a Democrat. I don't agree with her politically, but she put out a tweet yesterday that said, having Bill Clinton, my rapist, talk, that she referred to it as her rapist talking about, talking about empowering girls and women is like having Jeffrey Dahmer talk, you know, do a cooking show. And I thought that was a really good analogy.
It's so true.
Like, right. And what the hell are we doing supporting a party in any way that has been proven, to be exploitive to women and to such a gross extent? It is, I almost felt like they were just thumbing their nose or putting the middle finger towards, all of us.
Yeah.
You know, in a way.
Because they think they can get away with it. Yeah. It's just brazen. And, you know, I want to say thank you for talking about that. Yeah. Assault victims and anyone who's struggling or poor or working class doesn't have to hide who they are, right? That there's no shame in that. Because here's the deal. The people who have to hide are these corrupt politicians who are abusing the people, right, who are using their power to assault people and abuse people and to pass policies that hurt the poor and hurt the working class. They're the ones with the secrets. Mm-hmm. The powerful, the oligarchs, these two corrupt political parties, Joe Biden, they're the ones who should feel shameful. They're the ones who have to hide things. Right. The people who are suffering under this oppression and under this corrupt system, they have nothing to be ashamed about. They should feel proud of themselves for fighting back and for understanding that they deserve better, and they deserve to live a life of dignity, and they deserve to, and the powerful deserve to be held accountable for preventing that from happening. So it's amazing how our society continues to try to blame victims or shame people for being poor, shame people for being sexually harassed, when it's like, no, we should be shaming the oligarch who just took $200 million when thousands of people got, you know,
lost their living,
lost their jobs. We should be blaming the Joe Biden and shaming him for sexually harassing women. We should be, you know, we should be shaming the corrupt political system, not the people who are being exploited. It's like, it's so backwards, our society. Yeah. So just when you said that, it just like sparked something in me. I'm like, stop blaming the very people who are living under this oppressive rule, right, and start blaming the people who are doing the oppressing. Right. You know, and start fighting back against them, you know?
Exactly.
And so it's just that spark that people like you have that I think helps ignite the revolution and give people permission to be stronger and to be unashamed.
Be angry.
Because you faced your darkness, and not even your darkness, you faced the darkness that was inflicted upon you and said, no more.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to step into the light. I'm going to heal. I'm not going to live. I'm not going to allow Joe Biden to get away with this.
I think facing our shadows is important. And that's a good point. Yeah. And, you know, we just need to, you know, I have inner shadows. I'm like, we've talked earlier, right? I'm not perfect, but I'm not bad either. And I'm
Nobody
not good.
Is.
I'm a person. It's like where many things are true at once. And what the media tries to do is just good or bad. And that megaphone that's up to our ears, this person's bad. Don't look at them.
Right.
You know, and they megaphone it so that we can't see anything else. The noise is so loud, we can't see the truth.
Yep. And they're always using their megaphone to paint the person who's actually fighting for justice as somehow bad.
Yeah.
And the people who are perpetuating injustice and using a whole corrupt system to do it are somehow good. So it just, it's going to take all of us. And, you know, people wake up one person at a time. I had someone send me a message this morning and they said, I used to think you were crazy for calling Democrats and saying Democrats are just like Republicans. And turns out like you were right.
Yeah.
Like Democrats are doing the same thing as Republicans and they're kind of worse because they're acting like they're better and they're kind of smug and self-righteous and elitist.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what's happening. So, you know, that is how we get liberation. You know, open minds become free minds, and free minds lead to liberation.
Ooh,
and
as I like that.
And we all deserve liberation. Mm-hmm. Every single person on this planet deserves to be free from, you know, oligarchic rule and capitalist rule, and free from suppression and abuse and violence. And I'm just honored that you took the time to speak with me today. And I want to encourage everyone to pick up your book. And thank you, Tara, for everything.
Oh, thank you so
that
much.
You are and do.
It was a great conversation. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Amped Up with Ryan Knight. And before we go, I want to take this moment to thank our benefactors who contribute $20 a month to the show to keep this show alive and going. So I want to thank Kenny Ballantyne, Tyler Sambucci, Nate Tecito, Lloyd Chapman, Ed Romo, John Lippman, John Paul DeLuca, Susan Sarandon, DJ Comatose, Patty Cleary, and Elizabeth Kim. Thank you so much for your generous donations. And thank you, everyone, for supporting the podcast and supporting my work. I really appreciate it. Again, go to Patreon.com.
patreon.com/ampedup if you want to support the podcast as well. And for as little as $5 a month, you'll get access to our bonus content. Have a great weekend, everyone, and we'll catch you next week with an all-new episode of Amped Up with Ryan Knight.